Excellent. So thank you very much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm also teaching a doctoral course, which is being a whole lot of fun, until now at least. And I'm particularly happy to be here to present my latest work on deforestation, like Martin already said, and economic development. So basically we're going to have a look at what are the global determinants of differences in deforestation across countries. Okay, that's going to be the aim. This is joint work. Well, let me introduce myself again a little bit. My name is Jesus Crespo Quaresma. I am, like Martin said, mainly a professor at the Vienna University of Economics and Business. That's the first affiliation you see in there. But I'm also the director of economic analysis at the Wittgenstein Center for Demography and Global Human Capital. There we're having a look at issues related to education and development. I'm also a research scholar at the International Institute for Applied Systems Analysis, that's IASA. And I'm also a scientific consultant to the Austrian Institute for Economic Research, that's the WIFO. Okay, and this is joint work, so you can see with a whole lot of other co-authors. There's Olga there, there's Stephen there, Ian, Michael, and Linda. Probably you don't know them because they are not economists. They are geographers which are specialized, not all of them, actually Michael is an economist, but the other guys are geographers which are specialized on remote sensing. So they are interested mostly in creating data out of satellite pictures. And they are going to play a very important role in this presentation. Let me tell you what we want to do and how we have done it. What we want to do is pretty straightforward, and I already said it. We just want to know at the global level what are the main determinants of differences in forest cover across countries, that is, differences in deforestation levels across countries. Easy question. But the cool thing is how we have tried to have a look at that, as you will see in a second. Okay? Let me motivate the story a little bit. Having trees turns out to be a very, very cheap way of fighting climate change. So there is quite a lot of interest in understanding why some countries tend to deforest more than others, taking into account that, on the one hand, we expect over the coming decades convergence of income per capita across countries of the world. So you expect poor countries to become richer over time. Most of the scenarios with which the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is working, they deal with what would happen if African countries and Asian countries become as rich as Western economies right now. So there's a particular interest in measuring what kind of an effect would that have on the amount of trees that a country has, being one of the cheap ways of counteracting climate change. Okay, so the question we're going to ask ourselves is, what are the determinants of differences in deforestation across countries? Okay, the idea is, well, as countries get richer, will they keep on destroying forest cover, or does it come a point where they stop deforesting and even maybe start reforesting afterwards? That would be the idea of a particular type of environmental Kuznets curve that would be related just to deforestation. Okay, and that's going to be one of the main arguments that we are going to try to test in here. The literature until now, however, has been pretty unclear or pretty unsure about whether there is something like an environmental Kuznets curve for deforestation. Mostly because, first of all, it's really a complex relationship that we are looking at, and most importantly, because of the lack of data, as I will refer to in a second. So there are some papers out there that look at either very, very particular type of micro studies, where they have a look at some, whatever, village in Colombia, and they have a look at how forest cover has been changing over time, or they try to take a global perspective, but then they mix data which in principle are not to be mixed, because some of the data that we have out there are actual estimates of forest cover. Some others are model-based estimates of forest cover. So the best thing that you can hope for using those data is that you crack the model that they're using to create those data. And that's not exactly what we are interested in. This type of literature on deforestation and its determinants, actually, it's an extremely interdisciplinary research question. So you tend to find a whole lot of papers out there based on remote sensing, based on geography methodologies in order to measure how much deforestation has been going around. So there is a whole lot of papers. I'll just give you an example there, which is like a literature review. mostly from the bioscience side, on measuring deforestation. And there is another literature trying to have a look at the factors that affect deforestation. To my knowledge, there's only one famous economics paper. There's several of them, but there's one very famous economics paper that does that, that got published in the American Economic Review in 1994 by Cropper and Griffiths, that I will refer to in a second. But they use still these type of cross-country data sets, which are not very clear that you should mix with each other. So if you have a look at, if you take all the bits and pieces of studies that are outside there about the determinants of deforestation, there are basically a couple of factors that come out as appearing kind of important. Increases in population, urbanization, the type of agricultural practices that you have, government policies, issues related to agricultural trade, and many people, as I said, have investigated this issue of whether there is something like a deforestation Kuznets curve. The answer to that is no idea. Some people find it, some people don't find it. So if you have a look at the references in here, you have a paper in World Development in 2001 that finds clear evidence for a deforestation Kuznets curve. And some other people in the Journal of Development Economics, among a great econometrician, Gary Koop, finds no evidence whatsoever. The reason is a double one. Of course, there are different methods there. I'm going to argue that the methods are not the big point. The big point is that the fact that the data that they have been using until now is not the adequate one. Imagine that we had perfect data on forest cover across countries. So we would know how many trees, let's put it a bit bluntly. Imagine that we would know how many trees there are in each country of the world. Even if we knew that, you would still have the problem that geoclimatic differences across countries would need to be taken into account. So you would need to take into account that in some parts of Brazil, the terrain characteristics are completely different from those in some other parts of Brazil, and in Bolivia and in Chile. So accounting for all possible geoclimatic differences across countries is just a tough job. Okay? Maybe we could do it, but it's a tough job if you're going to get one number for by country concerning how much forest cover they have. Okay? Independently of that, that would be if we had the perfect data. However, the data which is available out there in terms of summary statistics for all countries of the world come from the FAO, and they're not really comparable across countries. There's a great literature about it saying that, well, basically, some countries are giving you actual estimates, and some others are giving you model-based estimates of forest inventory data. So basically what they're doing is something like, if you think about what we economists do with the perpetual inventory method for capital stocks, so they're doing the same thing for trees. So if you mix these data, as I said, basically the best thing you can hope for is that you crack the model that the FAO is using in order to create forest data. And that's not the idea. Okay. So the question is, well, given that situation, can we achieve any knowledge about how global differences in forest cover are determined, what the driving factors are? Well, in a perfect world in which we economists and social scientists in general could do experiments, so imagine, you know, the very first class in economics, there comes a guy and tells you, yeah, you know, we social scientists are social scientists because we cannot do experiments, as opposed to physicists and biologists. They go to the lab and they put the microscopes and they can exogenously change the things that they want. So in a perfect world where economists and social scientists in general could do experiments, this is what we would do, what is described in there. We would take a bunch of trees, exactly the same bunch of trees. We would put them in a particular type of terrain in a country. We would wait for some years and then count the trees. And then we would take the same terrain just to another country with the same trees and do the same show again. Right? That would be a perfect experiment. Okay? And if you do that often enough, then you can relate the differences in that bunch of trees, in the amount of trees that you have in there, to the socioeconomic characteristics of the two countries, right? Because all other things will be accounted for because it's the same batch of trees in the same particular type of terrain. Okay? Can we do that? And what I'm going to argue in this presentation is yes, we can do that. because we have a beautiful natural experiment. And that beautiful natural experiment is called national borders across countries of the world. So if you have a look at the border between two countries, in principle, we'll talk about it in a second, but in principle, let's assume that the border as itself, by the way, borders don't exist in the sense that there are no lines on the floor. So if terrain is the same to the right and to the left of every border of the world, the differences in forest cover around borders of the world should be determined by institutional and socioeconomic characteristics of those two countries. If it is the case that there is no difference between forest cover to the right and to the left of a border that divides two countries with very different levels of income per capita, that may imply that income per capita plays no role in defining differences in deforestation. So that's what we're going to do. And we're going to basically go to every border of the world. We're going to count trees to the left of the border, count trees to the right of the border. We will need to take into account the fact that not all borders of the world have got the same terrain to the right and to the left, but I will talk about that in a second. We're going to count trees to the left of every border of the world, to the right of every border, and we're going to put the difference that we observe across countries in comparison with the socioeconomic characteristics of those two countries. Okay, sounds cool. Are you with me? Let's try and do it. Actually, I did not have to send a whole lot of research assistants to all borders of the world. What we did is to get hold of this guy. Okay, so this guy is the Terra spacecraft of NASA that is circling us at this very moment and taking photos of us from up above. And in particular, most importantly, it's taking photos of every other part of the world apart from Masaryk University. And in particular, of all parts of the world that have forest cover. It takes such beautiful photos. Unfortunately, you cannot see very much. That's Hawaii. These are the photos of the Terra spacecraft are used to create Google Earth. So if you go to Google Earth, those photos that you see, which look like this I took from Google Earth, those photos are the ones that we're going to be using. So what we're going to do is we're going to take these photos, we're going to go to every border of the world, we're going to count, we're not going to count trees actually, but kind of, we're going to estimate how much forest cover there is to the right and to the left of every border of the world, and we're going to put that in relationship with, mostly let's think about income per capita, differences between the two countries. The six co-authors that you saw, they are doing this stuff. So basically based on light refraction, they're able to estimate with a great degree of exactness, they are able to estimate first of all, whether there are trees or bushes or any other thing in there, and how much of the terrain is covered by trees. Basically, they do it by pixel. So from a computer point of view, you have a pixel, and you estimate how much of that pixel is being covered by green, so to speak. Green that you identify through light refraction to be trees and not bushes. Okay, so they're really, really good at that. Not only are they good at that, they have great projects that have to do with validating satellite data. So they send really people to the terrain, and with mobile phones, they're basically sending photographs to, this is a European project that they have, they're sending photographs to these guys, and these guys are validating through GPS data, the satellite data they have, and their estimation of vegetation cover with the actual photos from the terrain. They have a very big project in Kenya and Tanzania right now, validating on the field or the satellite data to make sure that actually the estimates are right, and their degree of precision is really amazing. Okay, so here I bring you, let's see if you can see it, here I bring you an example of one of the borders that that we are going to be using. I don't know if you can see it, that's Portugal here, and that's Spain, that's kind of half of Spain. Yeah. This is where I come from Sevilla here. And as you can see, Sevilla is in here, in the middle of the delta of the Guadalquivir River, which is going in there. And here you have Huelva, and Huelva has got part of it being the border with Portugal, which would be here. Okay. So what we're going to do is the following. If you saw the border in here, What we're going to do is we're going to take 50 kilometers to the right and to the left. We're going to follow up here, and we're going to count how many trees there are, kind of, how much vegetation cover there is to the right and to the left of this border, for all borders in the world. Okay. Here you have another example with less trees. Fortunately, you cannot see it very properly. But here you have Namibia, and here you have Botswana, somewhere in the middle. And between Namibia and Botswana, the cool thing is that, first of all, you have no trees whatsoever because there's the Sahara Desert in there. So we will also have to take into account that some parts of the world just don't have trees because of what they are and not because of issues that are related to the socioeconomic differences between the two countries. Okay? So basically, that's what we're going to do. First of all, as part of the project, we created a new data set, which is now freely available, of relative vegetation cover, relative forest cover, between countries of the world based on vegetation around the forest. Around the forest cover around the border. Okay?
And yes. The year plays a role in that.
Yes. Well, actually, you have, of course, photographs. You have a panel of photographs, not only at one point in time. What you're doing is taking an average over the year, of course. But for trees, you still are able to recognize them even if they don't have many leaves. Yeah? Oh, well, not because of one photograph, but because of the photograph of the full year. Okay? Actually, it's actually a panel data set, but we only have it for 10 years or something like that. So in terms of recognizing trees, no problem, but in terms of having a look at, we're going to try to estimate differences based on the cross-section, not on the passing of time, because a tree takes a long time to grow. So you can, in 10 years, you cannot see really the differences in terms of new trees appearing or many new trees appearing. But in principle, in the long run, you would be able to do that. So as I tell you, what we do is to take the so-called moderate resolution imaging spectroradiometer data from the satellite that you saw before. And as I said, we use a buffer of 50 kilometers on both sides of each national border, and we obtain a measure of relative vegetation continuous field. That's how it's called. It's basically percentage of trees in that area. And we can then create some kind of overall measure that we call the CBDI, the Cross-Border Deforestation Index, that tells you just what is the ratio of vegetation or forest cover to the right and to the left of that. So you can also notice, well, what parts of the world have got more or bigger differences in terms of vegetation cover on one side of the border and on the other side. We have, however, one problem that probably you're already thinking about. If we go back to the Spanish example, again, you cannot see it very well, but here, the border between Spain and Portugal on the south side of Spain, around Huelva, you have the border itself is a natural border as well. You have mountains pretty much creating that border. To the right, you have these mountains in Huelva where we breed those wonderful pigs that then become Spanish ham. Okay, so this really, really cool stuff going on down there. To the left, you don't have those pigs because there are no mountains to kind of hang up the hams anymore. So it would be unfair to compare tree cover to the right and to the left of a border where on one side you have pretty much a valley and on the other side you have a mountain. So we need to make sure that when we are comparing tree cover to the right and to the left of every border of the world, that we are doing them keeping all the, not only the geoclimatic, not only the climatic differences, but also the geological differences constant. So it would be really great if we knew around those covers which parts of the terrain is comparable to the left and to the right of the border. Okay? So if we had something like that, it would tell you, hey, careful, on the right of that border, it's a different animal in terms of terrain than to the left of that border. Okay? We did not need to do that because that was already being done. That is something called homogeneous response units. And there is pretty much a map of homogeneous response units for the whole world, and in particular for all the borders of the world. These were actually some scientists from the International Institute for Applied Systems Analysis. It's a paper that got published in some remote sensing journal. And what they did is they classified around the borders of the world, they classified all the parts of the border into different categories based on altitude, based on slope, and based on soil composition. So you know which parts of the border are at the same level of altitude within these classes, of course, 0 to 300 meters, 300 to 600 meters, 600 to 1,100, and so on. You know which kind of slope they have, whether they are on a mountain or not, so which from 0 to 3 degrees and so on until more than 50 degrees. And you know the soil composition. You know whether the soil is sandy, loamy, clay, stony, and peat, whatever that means, just different type of terrain characteristics. That means we have this three-dimensional classification system, and we can make sure that to the right and to the left of the border, we are comparing, or for which parts of the border we can compare, in terms of that these three characteristics fall exactly in the same point. That means you're comparing, say, loamy, 0 to 3 degrees and 0 to 300 meters with exactly the same on the other side of the border. So what we did now is we took the map of the world with all the trees. We put the map of the borders on top of it. We cut out 50 kilometers around all borders of the world, and we put on top of that the homogeneous response unit layer, telling us, okay, these parts of the border are comparable. And that took us to this type of map. Okay, so this is basically the main ingredient of the analysis we're going to do. Here you have some examples of borders in the world with the 50 kilometer buffer to the right and to the left, and the parts which have colors at all, they are the parts that fall on a homogeneous response unit. That means where you can be sure that to the right and to the left of that border, in those points, terrain is identical. Okay? So as you can see, between Afghanistan and Pakistan, there's quite a lot of the border that does not fall on a homogeneous response unit. That means that part you should not compare, because it's based on some kind of natural border that makes the left and the right not be comparable. However, part of it is comparable. Okay? That's the part that you can see is in red. And then the color is telling you how much forest cover there is. As you can see, between Pakistan and Afghanistan, there's not much forest around, as you would expect, probably. If you go to Brazil and Bolivia, that's a very interesting border. First of all, you have a lot of more parts which fall on homogeneous response units. So the parts which are not gray, which are like yellow and orange and green, those parts are actually falling on a homogeneous response unit. And you can see the vegetation cover for all parts of the border. In particular, if you concentrate on this part, you can see very beautifully how much more trees there are in Bolivia as compared to Brazil, where more deforestation has taken place. Okay? Here you have also a very interesting example where the border between Laos and Thailand tends to have much more or more forest on the side of Laos than on the side of Thailand. And on the other hand, if you have a look at the other border, you have more trees than in this border. Okay? Between Angola and the Democratic Republic of Congo, as you can see, the differences are smaller in terms of color, and that's it. And what we did is, for the part of the homogeneous response unit that is large enough as to have some type of evidence, we computed what is the ratio of vegetation, of forest cover, on one side and on the other side of the border. Okay, so that's going to be our object of study. Basically the ratio of forest cover for one country compared to its neighboring country.
How big is the area?
The homogeneous response unit? You have to wait a second because I don't remember exactly the number. It's 500 square kilometers. It has to be for us to consider it at all. Okay, and we will do in the end a robustness check, that's where I went to, by changing, making it less conservative, the minimum amount of area that you require. So in this example, in the results I'm going to show you, you need to have at least 500 kilometers of a homogeneous response unit that goes through both borders, obviously, in order to get one data point. Okay. So as I said, what we did is then collapse those differences into a cross-border deforestation index. That means the ratio of one to the other. So we transformed this into a single color that told you how much difference is there from one side of the border to the other side of the border. So you can see in Brazil, between Brazil and Bolivia, there are very big differences. The redder it is, the bigger the difference. Between Afghanistan and Pakistan, it's kind of a middle one. Between Angola and the Democratic Republic of Congo, you have relatively little difference. And here you have a part of the world where basically, depending on the border you look at, you have more or less difference. And we collapsed all that for the whole world. So we have now, for all pairs of countries of the world that are neighboring, an indicator called the CBDI, the Cross-Border Deforestation Index, that tells you how much more forest cover there is on one side as compared to the other. So you can see the whole Sahara Desert. We can forget about it because there's not enough vegetation at all. We require, I think it's 10% of the cover of the border, or 20% of the border, to have at least some forest cover. Otherwise, you know, deforestation in the Sahara Desert is not a big issue yet. And you have very, very interesting differences. I mean, probably, do you know what's the biggest difference in deforestation across borders in the world? There's one example which is very spectacular. It's based on historical reasons, actually not very much on socioeconomical reasons. It's somewhere around here. No. It's the border between Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Because the Dominican Republic was under Spanish colonial law, and the Haiti was under French colonial law, and there are accounts of the fact that, I don't know exactly the story, but French people were abusing the slaves much more than the Spanish ones. So when colonial times ended, the Haiti people, in retaliation, burned the whole fields down. And it's beautiful cover also to see in photographs, because you can recognize Dominican Republic with the trees on the right and nothing, just kind of black stuff on the left, which was Haiti. And this we pick up beautifully in there. Interesting case is also China. China, depending on which border you look at, you have either a whole lot of deforestation, that's something that is reported in the literature very often, but with some of the borders, it does not have so much, which basically implies that probably the relative income per capita differences of these countries may play a role, or some other type of socioeconomic characteristics. Okay, and as you can see, this is going to be pretty much our ingredient. We're going to take these differences and we're going to put them in relation. Notice these are bilateral data, so one observation is a couple of countries, and we're going to put that in comparison with the characteristics of the two countries, as if it was kind of a gravity equation or something like that, something where each observation refers to the relationship between two countries. We put that in relationship with the two variables of that country. Okay, very, very simple. Actually, the econometric analysis now, it's the simplest it gets. It's like 101 econometrics. It's just a simple OLS regression across countries, across couples of countries, where we try to address what are the factors that explain differences in the cross-border deforestation index. For that, since we did not want to reinvent the wheel at that point, or at least not in the econometric analysis, that's why I claimed before that actually I think that the problem was much more the data than the fact that people use different methodologies. What we did is we went to the American Economic Review paper by Cropper and Griffiths, and we took the same model that they estimated. They assumed that deforestation in a country is affected by the level of income and the square of the level of income in order to replicate the environmental Kuznets curve, or deforestation Kuznets curve, the growth rate of income per capita, population growth, rural population density in the countries, some institutional variables they try, and of course, in principle, it's affected by both observable and unobservable geoclimatic differences. Because in their paper, they had just one average for the country. So they needed to also control for whatever, you name it, rainfall, mountainous terrain, or something of that sort. So the type of model that we're going to have has got the beautiful characteristic that we can forget about these guys. Because we have made sure in the experimental setting that created our data, we made sure that all those geoclimatic differences are accounted for. That means we don't need to take into account anymore the fact that it rains more on one side of the, on some part of Brazil than on some other part of Brazil. Okay? So the model looks as follows. This is the model that Cropper and Griffiths used. So it's vegetation cover of country I depends on the income per capita of country I, the square of the income per capita of country I, the growth rate of income in country I, population growth, rural density, and all those geoclimatic characteristics. I have put them, all of them, into that vector set in the end. Now, if we, since what we have here is already the ratio of vegetation cover, and we have made sure that the characteristics, all the sets, are the same across pairs of countries, then when we create the ratio of vegetation cover in country one to vegetation cover in country two, these guys disappear. And that means we don't need to control anymore for geoclimatic differences. We just need to control for, I mean, if we believe Cropper's and Griffith's specification, we just need to control for the differences in income, the differences in income squared, in order to get the Kuznets curve, if there is one. Population growth differences, income growth differences, and rural density differences, and that's it. Okay. This is, the whole thing is measured, good point. The whole thing is measured in the year 2005, over the year, like averaged over the year. The population growth and the income per capita growth, we have basically two versions of the model. In one of them, we had a look at the period 2000 to 2005, so that you would think that whatever deforestation came from growth has already been realized. In some other cases, we went back 10 years. The only problem we had is we have many ex-Yugoslavian countries for which data prior to 2000 was a little bit difficult to find. So in the end, we concentrated on 5 years prior to the observation of the cover, of the forest cover. Okay? And we took that and we did a simple OLS regression that gave us this. Okay? So if you concentrate on the first column, these are the results of the paper. There's nothing more. The rest is just robustness checks and trying to grasp out where the differences are. So here you have the model of Cropper and Griffiths estimated for our bilateral data set. As you can see, we only have 189 observations. Those are the couples of countries for which we have data, end of the story. I mean, we have data for everybody, but for which we have data of all the variables and where all the conditions to be included in the data set, like at least 20% of forest cover, a homogeneous response unit, which is big enough, and so on, is fulfilled. So we have 189 observations. We include continent dummies. So on top of that, we control for continent differences. And it's the global sample, so it's all countries of the world. And as you can see, not significant, not significant, not significant. There's only one thing which is significant. I mean, two things, which is income per capita differences negatively and income per capita squared positively. Exactly what you would expect. I mean, if you believe in the environmental Kuznets curve, that's exactly what should happen. First interesting thing, there's nothing else. When you account for that, the rest of the variables that Cropper and Griffiths used do not play any role. Second of all, still, you cannot explain much of the differences in deforestation differences across countries. You only have an R squared, as you can see, of 8%. So only 8% of the variation in forest cover differences can be explained through income differences and the other guys. Okay? So the next thing we did is to try to grasp, where does that come from? How come that we can explain so little of the global variation? So what we did is just, instead of including continent dummies as kind of extra variables, we just divided the sample by continent and had a look at that particular specification by continent. Okay? Those are 1, 2, 3, 4, the four columns afterwards. Okay? So it's just for Africa, for Asia, for America, and for Europe. Okay? And what you notice, as you can see, is that the whole environmental Kuznets curve story is driven or is visible just because we have the African sample with us, meaning the lower income per capita levels. Afterwards, here, there's not much going on, which pretty much implies you need to have data on relatively poor country experiences with deforestation in order to grasp how differences in income per capita reflect themselves in deforestation differences. Speak up, anytime. Yeah. That's a very good point. That would explain why we have relatively many observations in there. Because the more artificial your border is, the higher the probability that it will be included in our sample, because natural borders will not play an important role, number one. Number two, what is playing against you is that you have a big desert in the middle that is taking you observations for a different reason, namely because there is no forest. Mm-hmm. But that would just imply that if it is the case that the result is driven by that, that would just mean that the possibility of having a more natural experiment setting is able to grasp that effect better. But if the differences on the right and left of the border were just too big, your observation would not be in the data point and in the data set anyway. So I don't think that that's the main reason why we find that. My explanation is that the income differences that you experience in African countries are the ones that really make the difference for deforestation. Afterwards, the average income per capita differences that you see in Asia, America, or Europe, these countries are too rich, so to speak, to really capture differences in income per capita that lead to differences in deforestation. And this is confirmed, just one second. This is confirmed if you have a look at the environmental Kuznets curve that we find. This is the result of that first regression, just the drawing. And as you can see, basically from here onwards, that's the reversal of the environmental Kuznets curve. Look at the 2-time standard deviations. Not the names, forget the names. But if you look here, you have 2 times the standard deviations.
Okay.
Here and here, to measure the uncertainty around the estimate, right? So this is the estimated Kuznets curve, and this is the confidence, the kind of a 95% confidence interval. And what you can see is that after the decrease in forest cover that comes from getting rich when you are very poor, afterwards, nothing happens. This is so uncertain that you might as well just have no reversal at all. You could draw something like this, and you would still be within the 95% confidence interval, which basically means there is evidence that as you start deforesting when you are very poor, you then deforest less and less and less, and eventually you stop deforesting. But we don't know if you start reforesting at some point. There is no evidence about that. And these differences, the ones that are really giving you information about how the environmental Kuznets curve looks like, they're all driven mostly by African countries, because they are the guys who are in here. So that's, I think, the explanation why you find it in Africa, not in the rest of the world. Excellent point.
Because China's income per capita would be a lot influenced by the big cities which are on the border,
yep.
And the income per capita in the regions where you have your data from is extremely different from what.
Excellent point. You're completely right. In a perfect world, I'll tell you what we have done about that. In a perfect world, we would put these differences in forest cover in relationship with the income per capita of people living in there, or at least living in this part of the country. Needless to say, we don't have those data. However, we have data on infrastructure around the borders. So we also have satellite data, for example, on how much road density there is in here, and things like urbanization density. They are also estimates, but they are estimates that would correspond exactly to the border. Now, I'm not claiming that that is a good proxy for income per capita, because it could be that you have a great highway in there, but that doesn't mean that that part of the country is particularly rich. However, when we control for that, because we have the data for all borders of the world, nothing changes. So it's still income per capita draws at least half of a deforestation Kuznets curve, and that variable does not appear significant. But you're completely right. That would be the perfect way of doing it, but we don't have the data. Not even at the regional level. It would be cool to just concentrate at least in the region which is in here. But we don't have it. Okay, so, yeah. Let me recapitulate what we have learned from here. First of all, income per capita differences appear as the most important variable to explain deforestation differences across countries. We find something like an environmental Kuznets curve for deforestation. We don't know about the reforestation part, but until then, we find at least half of a deforestation Kuznets curve. The results are mostly driven by the African subsample, meaning you need differences in income per capita at a very low level in order to grasp the relationship between income per capita and forest cover. The turning point, the estimate where the effect does not go on being negative, it's at $2,005 international dollars. That's the income per capita of Guatemala, just to give you an idea of where that. So basically, as soon as you become an emerging economy or middle-income country, the effect of forest cover disappears. That doesn't mean you go up again, but at least you don't keep on average, deforesting. We don't find population pressure and urbanization effects beyond those that come through income per capita. You can argue this is so related to income per capita that you're just capturing everything. Could be the case. We don't mind, but we don't find any extra effects in there. So you can see, I did not tell you about it, we also tried around with a whole lot of, here I just show you one of them, but we tried with a whole lot of institutional variables. There's a big literature out there, and we economists also think that how you deal with a natural resource is very much related to the type of property right institutions that you have in the country. So we accounted for rule of law, for other type of political, institutional variables. Nothing appeared significant or beyond income per capita. Again, you can argue that rule of law is so related to income per capita that it's just a multicollinearity problem. Fair enough, but there's nothing else, at least. The only variable of the menu that we tried that actually made a difference is if you have a look at agricultural sector trade. So basically, economies which are very much related with natural resource trade tend to have more deforestation, but it doesn't break the results that we see in there. So it appears significant on top of it, basically exports of primary sector exports, but it doesn't change the picture in here. Okay, great. So yeah, start. Now come all the robustness checks. Yeah. That's the point. The point is made.
So you have some repeating, for some countries you have more observations, right?
Because yes. Yes.
The units.
Yes, that's true.
So at the end, it may be that the result is driven by one country, right? That is very influential.
That has many borders and that.
Or a few countries that repeat in 158.
I mean, there's no country that would be so dominant that it would dominate the sample by, you know, getting rid of 10% of the observations when you get rid of the country, because there is no country for which we would have data on 20 borders of that country. However, I have to admit, we have not tried some kind of robustness check by getting rid of at least the countries that have the most numbers of recorded borders. We tried a robustness check once. I mean, it did not change the results, but I don't remember the exact details. But we basically weighted each observation down by the number of borders they had, which is a bit in that direction. And it did not change anything. But we did not do a kind of a one-out re-estimation procedure where you could check whether it's all dominated by some countries. Taking into account that the effect is very, very prominent in Africa, where none of these big countries that have a lot of borders is. So I would think that doesn't play a very important role.
I just was thinking to have a regression in which each country pair would appear only once.
And how would I select the country pair that I want from a country that has more than one country pair?
So you take the maximum or minimum or median.
But then I would need to also take the maximum or medium or median of all the neighbors, no? The problem is I need each observation relates. Do I have a? Oh yeah, here. You have. You have one observation which corresponds to a pair of countries, and that in that regression is put in relationship with characteristics of country I and characteristics of country J, right?
Sure.
So if I say, okay, I fix one country and I take the average of all the other countries, then I would not know what to put in here.
No, I don't like to fix the pair, because right, if you have which two countries, Laos and
Thailand, yeah.
Thailand. Laos and Thailand may appear three times there if there are three units.
No, sorry. That was a misunderstanding. No. Each pair of countries appears only once. And that is, there are different ways of measuring then the dependent variable. We tried with the average of all of the countries or of all of the borders, or with the maximum of all of the borders, or with the difference corresponding to the largest homogeneous response unit across all borders. Sorry, now I understand your question. So now that's taken care of. The other thing would be too weird.
Oh, yeah.
Where you repeat covers. So we took one observation per country pair.
Okay.
In that regression. And that is based, I think the results I'm presenting here are based on the maximum size homogeneous response unit across all borders that to do those two countries. But it's a very good point. If we had done it the other way around, it would be a bit fishy. We tried rule of law, corruption, and pretty much that's it. Rule of law and corruption. I mean, you need a variable that is available for as many countries as possible. We also have all those polity four variables, but they are related to political characteristics, I would not have any theory why that is related to deforestation. I would have a theory that has to do with rule of law, because that's related to property rights. I would have a theory that has to do with corruption, because that's also related to property rights, but nothing else. So we tried with those variables, at least we report. I don't know if at some point we tried with some other. So it's a corruption index and the rule of law index. Great. Should we go on with robustness checks? Great, so the first robustness check we did was going back to the comment you gave before. We based all the results on measuring the relative deforestation between two countries based on the largest homogeneous response unit, that is the part which is comparable, that has at least 500 squared kilometers. Okay? We just did not want to base our inference on an extremely small evidence on the border. That is the first column in here. Okay? So in the other columns, what we did is to make that assumption more stringent. In the second column, the assumption was we are only going to base our data set on pairs of countries that share a homogeneous response unit, which is at least 1,000 squared kilometers large. Okay? Needless to say, we lose some observations. Here you can see there are five country pairs, which were based on a homogeneous response unit somewhere between 500 and 1,000. But as you can see, the environmental Kuznets curve is still there. And then we went all the way to 2,500 squared kilometers. You lose then already kind of 10% of your observations. However, at a smaller degree of significance, but still you find that the only thing which is driving the differences in deforestation is just income per capita, at least being significant at the 10% level. Okay, so robustness check, check. On top of that, as I said, we controlled for border-based infrastructure and population. That was your point. We also have estimates of population density at the border, based also on satellite data and light intensity data. We control for that. There are indicators whose quality I cannot really understand, or I don't have much evidence of how good they are qualitatively, but we had data on population density and infrastructure at the border. We control for it, nothing changed. We control for differences in governance, as I said, rule of law and the corruption control. We control for colonial past because of the story I told you about Haiti and the Dominican Republic. When you talk to political scientists, there seems to be quite a lot of agreement across political scientists that these kind of environmental outcomes are very, very related to colonial power relationships. So we control for Chinese, France, Spanish, UK, Netherlands, Portugal, and Russian colonial past. Nothing changed. And another thing we did was the following, which I think is also really interesting, or is something that should be discussed. The specification we are using assumes a very particular relationship between income per capita differences and deforestation, namely a quadratic one. Now, a quadratic relationship is pretty cool because it's easy to estimate. It does not break the linearity in parameters that you require to do standard OLS regression. But it has the problem that it assumes that, at least at the log level, that the relationship is symmetric. That means that the decrease that you have until you reach the minimum is of the same slope as the increase that you have afterwards. Okay? That's why we get this beautiful type of graph when we plot it. Okay? But if it was the case that you had an asymmetric environmental Kuznets curve, meaning that the slope in here was different from the slope in here, then imposing a quadratic relationship may lead to overestimation or underestimation of one of the two tails, and eventually maybe even finding a U-shaped relationship which is not existing, just because you're imposing that symmetry on both sides. So what we did is, instead of estimating a polynomial, a quadratic relationship, we estimated a piecewise linear relationship. So we estimated a so-called threshold model. What we did is the following. We assumed that the relationship between forest cover and income per capita, after controlling for the other variables, is composed by two linear functions that pivot on some threshold. So basically, we are approximating any type of quadratic or any type of nonlinear function by two linear functions stuck on each other. Okay? And what we did, you have here income per capita and you have here forest cover. What we did is, of course, not to fix the threshold point, but to estimate also the threshold point. Okay? There's a very well-known literature outside there on threshold model estimation. What you do is pretty much you try for all possible thresholds. You estimate one model where you have a breaking point in each one of the possible thresholds, so one model for each threshold, and then you estimate your threshold as the threshold corresponding to the model that explains the data best. Okay? And by doing that, what you have is one estimate of where the breaking point is and one estimate of the slope to the left and the slope to the right. Okay? So we are basically approximating any type of nonlinear function by a piecewise linear function with one threshold. You can do it with two thresholds or three thresholds, but we don't have so many observations, so we simplified it to the limit. And of course, if the true relationship was actually purely symmetric, then you would get an approximation that would look pretty much like that, where the slope would be the same. But if the true relationship is asymmetric, meaning that, for example, it falls very quickly and then it increases very slowly, then you would approximate that by a linear function until here, another linear function, and the slopes would be different, and you would be able to say, hey, well, the quadratic form was not a good idea because the slopes are different right and left of the minimum. So we did that, and we found that the threshold estimate is actually relatively higher than the one we found before. Instead of being 50, it was 5,500 before, now it's 9,200. So it's, instead of being here, it's somewhere around here. And what we found is that below the threshold, the slope is minus 0.038. Forget it, the number is not so important, but as you can see, this is the standard deviation, so it's pretty much significant on the left of it, at least to the 5%, 10.5%. Afterwards, it's positive. It's actually smaller than the other one, so actually the idea that you have an asymmetric one was not a bad one. However, as you can see, the standard deviation is almost as big as the slope estimate, so pretty much you don't know what's going on in there, which actually just tells us that our idea was not too bad, in the sense that we don't find anything in here. We find on average reforestation, but so much uncertainty that we cannot say anything. But this part we are pretty sure about, in the sense that this slope is well estimated. We just don't know what's happening in here. We know that on average it increases, but we are so uncertain about it that it might as well be the case that it remains constant. But we know that it's not any more negative as it used to be. So we have basically evidence for half of a deforestation Kuznets curve. Okay, so that was it. What did we do? We developed a new data set. First of all, we created a new data set of cross-border relative vegetation cover, which can be used, of course, for many other, I cannot think of many other, but probably it can be used for many other studies on deforestation differences or on maybe indicators of some other type of global determinants of environmental depletion. We found out that income per capita differences are actually the driving force of differences in deforestation across covers, with the caveat that we are, getting back to your point, with the caveat that we are taking average income per capita across countries. And that that means that as very poor countries develop, deforestation takes place, and it takes place significantly, but eventually it stops. It might as well even reforest, but for sure it doesn't go on. Okay. Exactly, it reverts on average, but we don't know about the, I mean, it's too uncertain to say anything else. Our results are robust to the definition of the cross-border deforestation index, in the sense of having 500, 1,000, or 2,500 square kilometers, and robust to controlling for institutional quality, colonial past, border infrastructure, population density, as well as to changing the specification of the environmental Kuznets curve from a purely quadratic one to something which is piecewise linear. Okay? We actually also tried a piecewise linear estimate with three regimes, with two thresholds, and what we found was also pretty much negative, and then nothing, and a little bit positive, but not significant. So basically, same result kept coming up again and again. Okay, that's it. Hope you liked it.